don't need no education. Welcome to Education Nation, where we tackle the biggest issues in American education. Your host is the headmaster of Liberty Classical Academy, Rebecca Hagstrom, along with co-host Mark Durkin. School is now in session.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us here on Education Nation. I am your host, Rebecca Hagstrom, and it's a privilege to join you this Saturday morning. And I'm joined in studio once again with the producer of Education Nation and co-host, Mark Durkin.
Good morning, Rebecca. It's hot outside. Summer's here.
I know. Summer is really here. It kind of just came in with a boom, didn't it?
It did.
Yeah. Recently on the show, Mark, we, as you obviously know, we've spent a considerable amount of time discussing a whole host of legislation that really reflects the nature of the division that's present in this country. Mm-hmm. And last month, we learned that the legislation of century-old state Blaine amendments is constitutional.
Or unconstitutional.
Yeah, or did I say constitutional? We're off to a little rough start here this morning, aren't we? I spilled my water before
really
we go on air, and it's not my day. So bear with me, listening audience. So we determined that the Blaine amendments are unconstitutional and that they violate the religious establishment and free exercise clauses of the First Amendment. And just last week here in Minnesota, Governor Dayton made it clear that he did not want opportunity scholarship tax credits as part of the state's tax relief bill. Actually, I think that might have been 2 weeks ago. The scholarships would have benefited low-income students in their pursuit of the quality education they deserve, and it really is disappointing.
It is, very much. And these are just two of countless examples of where inalienable rights granted to us by our Creator are essentially being denied, I believe, at the government level in the name of what's best for the collective good and the changing of the times. So where does this idea of changing government come from? Well, today we want to talk about the rise in the history of progressivism here in American government.
Mm-hmm. And joining us in studio once again to help us understand the shift in philosophy of American government is former Minnesota State Senator David Hand. And he joined us last week to discuss the fallout of the opportunity scholarships. And we are just really excited to have you back in studio again, Senator Hand.
Thanks for having me. Good to be with you again.
Thank you. Well, before we begin our discussion on progressivism, can you explain for our audience what the permanent notion of just government as it was outlined in the Declaration of Independence actually means?
Well, I think it was a very unique thing that the founders did. They tried to create a government that recognized the truth of the way human beings are, our human nature. And mm-hmm. so they wrote in the Declaration of Independence a vision for the way people really are, that we are created with certain unalienable rights, that there are self-evident truths that we can know simply by being human, mm-hmm. and that government, just government, is premised on the protection of those rights. And this was very unique at the time. There'd been throughout human history, there had never been an example of government trying to be constituted with a view of protecting the natural rights of people. Mm-hmm. Throughout most of human history, people have been governed by some form of despotism, or mm-hmm. else have lived in anarchy, which right. might even be worse. And that has been the norm. It's still the norm today. Most people in the world are still governed under these kind of despotic or anarchic regimes. And in this country, the founders had this very clear, unique vision of trying to create a government that was really based on sound truths about the way people are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and even taking into consideration human nature. And you mentioned that at the beginning, too, and realizing that men are not born good. They need to be taught. And those rights come from that Creator. And when we're taught how to properly behave, we're much more likely to have a healthy culture.
Well, and you know, this really goes back to, you know, the ancients. Aristotle writes about, you know, man is a one of the things that's true about our nature is that we're political, that, mm-hmm. that we have the capacity to reason and talk, that those things are very intimately related. Right. No other being in the universe has those capacities, so we are unique, and that unique political nature means that, that throughout human history, we always live together in societies and we always find ways, a code of rules to live by and the laws. And the real question is, how do we do this? And politics, truly understood, at least Aristotle would say, is premised on it's the way that, that, that free people, using reason, organize their lives together. Mm-hmm. And so in this country, when the founders were working to create this, this form of government, they were aware of all these things. Mm-hmm. They were educated people. Mm-hmm. And they were trying to devise a system that would recognize the true things about people and to create a society that they believed would be good and just and governed by people in the exercise of their reason and mm-hmm. working together.
Mm-hmm. Very important.
And teaching that will really help people know the difference between right and wrong and really cement
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, they believed that you had to have people who were virtuous to make this happen, that, mm-hmm. that you had to have the right culture, if you will, mm-hmm. that this kind of form of government can only exist with certain cultural presumptions. And that really goes back to what the purpose of education was to help people who, as you say, are not mm-hmm. born with these virtues. We're right. not born as infants with the understanding of good and evil. We are taught. Mm-hmm. And in most cases, we hope that families teach their children. But the society also has an obligation through the education system to reinforce that.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is so distinctly different from how the progressives viewed rights and where they came from. And so maybe you could share with us a general definition of progressivism. I think people have heard that term a lot. I don't know how many people actually understand what it means.
Well, it's a good question. And today, of course, the Democrat Party now calls itself progressive, which is really mm-hmm. kind of remarkable. I think it's refreshingly honest. But I think what they hope for and depend on is that most people don't understand.
Exactly. Which is why we're doing this show.
Right. And who objects to progress? Progress has got,
sure,
you know, it's just
good.
One of these words that has a great connotation. We're mm-hmm. all for progress. But progressivism is a particular philosophy that has probably been around 100 years or so, early 20th century, and it grew out of some philosophical work that came out of Germany in particular, but out of Europe. And what it really signified was the attempt or the desire to reject the notions of the founders, that there were absolutely true things about human nature, mm-hmm. And that these things that they said were true and self-evident, they said, no, they just were wrong. And, mm-hmm. and we need to progress beyond that and recognize that every society is different and every society has got different things. And so we have to be constantly putting ourselves in tune with the current prevailing desires mm-hmm. of a society. And so to replace this, what they called the absolutism of the founders, they had this sort of historical contingency of, well, we have to look around, see what's going on today, and then model our laws. And what that really boils down to is that the idea of rights as citizens come from whatever the elected representatives of that society believe them to be. Hmm. And that they are changeable based on whatever the whim of the most recent majority may want them to be.
Which is quite frightening because really then you kind of, we're going to talk about this a little bit more later, but you do end up then a little bit with mob rule and we're kind of seeing that. I mean, look at some of the college campuses today and some of the political rallies and that's a frightening prospect. The progressives I know, thanks in large part to Mark, having done some great research here, they believed that stringent restrictions on government power were no longer needed to protect liberty. And evidently, much of this came from their view of the advancements in science and human nature. This idea that, Darwin's theory of evolution applied to people as well. And, what do you know about that? Do you agree with the progressives?
Well, yes, objection? I think at the bottom, they're kind of utopian and all despotisms grow from visions of utopia.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But what they believe is in a kind of a perfectibility of humankind, that because our nature isn't a thing that is unchanging, it is malleable, it's really only a question of, well, then who's going to mold it? Mm-hmm. And then they look at the power of government, and certainly governments are very powerful. They're wealthy, you have resources beyond dream. And to use all that power to mold people, to do away with all the greed and intolerance or bigotry or whatever the ill is that you mm-hmm. can conceive of, progressives mm-hmm. believe that through the power of government, these things can be eliminated. Mm-hmm. And that in that sense, that the vices that humankind has known for throughout all of human history, can be mitigated or completely done away with by changing our nature, since it is changeable. Since the founder said, no, it's not changeable, it's what it is, progressives say, oh, no, no, it is changeable, and it is the power of government that we can use to bring about those changes that the people desire.
Very interesting. And I can see where that really did tie in with Darwin's theory, you know, of evolution. And that was a really important new theory in the late 1800s. And I think it really did influence the thinking. There was much more secularized thinking, the notion of, you know, a god or anything of that sort was starting to really dissipate out of our culture. And you can see then where people would then believe, well, okay, we are born good and just give people the right set of circumstances and they're going to make the best decisions for themselves.
Right. And I think you're right about, I believe you're right, that there is this sort of evolutionary thinking that is part of what the progressives believe. But it's a little different in that when you look at the rest of the world, the rest of the universe, you know, animals and all, you know, the evolution that they say applies to that is sort of this outside force that comes in, and the animals and the species themselves are, you know, they're not operating it. They're just sort of participating in it. Well, with people, what the progressives say is, well, yeah, there's a sort of evolutionary thing that our nature can change, but guess what? We can do it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really reminds me in some ways of the going back to the, you know, the story of the fall in Genesis, you know, the man eating from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil and being able to, as Adam and Eve thought, that they could then become godlike and decide what was good and bad, decide what was good and evil.
Right.
And God says, that's my job, not yours, but they ate from the tree. And so that's the reason why we are fallen, is that we have this belief that we can decide what is good and what is evil, and that we are outside of any law other than one of our own making. And that really is consistent with what the progressives believe. They say there is no law that's permanent. It's only the things that we as human beings make up. And if we want to change them, we can. I joke with people. I say, you know, if we went to the legislature and said, let's change the law of gravity because, you know, when you fall, it hurts. And if we could just mitigate that so that we wouldn't wouldn't that be a great thing? And people would say, well, you're nuts. But we don't, when we say, well, we're going to change, say, laws that have to do with men and women and marriage and gender. We can do that. We can just write a law and things will be different.
As though we had the power to do that. Yes, those types of natural laws are every bit as, or social laws of who we are every bit as biologically based as the law of gravity is physically based.
Rest of the universe is governed by law, which we say that it is, and it's the premise of science, all natural science is based on this idea that laws are consistent and that they operate the same way.
Right.
And then we say everything is governed by law except people.
Right.
Really. So we're sort of outside. But this is the heart of the progressive notion, I think, that the founders understood that this nature was constant and we had to respect it and we had to find ways to work with it. Progressors saying, no. They didn't understand. You know, history is moving. Things are changing. We can write our own law. We can be a law unto ourselves. We can design our own realities and we can perfect ourselves.
Hmm. Well, I want to skip ahead here just a little bit because we're going to talk about how progressives really embrace this notion of historical contingency. Senator Hand touched on this over the last couple of minutes. It's the idea that just government is contingent on the given conditions at any time. You know, liberals, they have faith, but it's in the forward progress of history. And so what I want to really talk about here is, you know, how would the early progressives go about bringing this transformation? Well, early progressives knew that Americans knew the Constitution. They knew it very well. It was a means to an end to keep government confined, checks and balances, rights from God, as we just mentioned. And schools, if you remember over the last couple of weeks, we talked about how they were Protestant run at the time. There was that foundation for the schools. And in order to get their policies enacted, there needed to be sustained critiques against the nation's founding principles when they were incorporated. Woodrow Wilson. Now, when you hear that name, you think former president of the United States, 28th president. He was a leading force in the progressive movement, and he wrote in 1887 as a young intellectual, he said this, quote, "For it is very clear that in fundamental theory, socialism and democracy are almost, if not quite, one and the same. They both rest at bottom upon the absolute right of the community to determine its own destiny and that of its members. Men as communities are supreme over men as individuals, end of quote. And that's really the heart of the progressive democratic movement. What's best for the community? Individual rights come second. And also, Woodrow Wilson, on a 4th of July speech at the Jefferson Club in 1911, he said this. He said, quote, "If you want to understand the real Declaration of Independence, do not repeat the preface." So the question becomes, what was in the preface of the Declaration of Independence? All men created equal, having certain rights according to the laws of nature, a government based on the consent of the governed. In all, it was a government all men were entitled to by nature, as we talked about earlier in the segment. Wilson, he wanted to put these aside. He wanted these to be forgotten. And so this speech, along with progressive thought, it insinuated that the principles of the founding, they needed to be confined to the historical circumstances of the founding era. Put it away in the dustbin. It's in the past. So progressives, what do? They say that the great sin that was committed by the founders was suggesting that natural rights is the right way to form every government, anytime, in any place. And so there were many, many speeches that Woodrow Wilson gave, and I'll quote just one more that he gave from the presidential campaign trail in a speech called What is Progress? And here's a quote from that. He said, quote, "The trouble with the founders' theory is government is not a machine, but a living thing. It falls not under the theory of the universe, but under the theory of organic life. It is accountable to Darwin, not to Newton. It is modified by its environment, shaped to its functions by the sheer pressure of life," end of quote. So what is this saying? Lots of evolutionary language, environmental changes, adapt or die. Thinking must change if historical environment is changing.
Mm. Yeah, what are your thoughts on some of that, Senator Hand?
Well, I think that is true, and mm-hmm. Wilson certainly was the first, I think, truly progressive president. He was a president of Princeton University before he became president. He was an intellectual. And he really did. He said the founders just got it wrong. You know, they were good guys, but they just got it wrong. They didn't understand history. And he argued for this progressive sense that we have to be in touch with this force of history and make these changes and adjust and change. And while some people say, well, he was rejecting this absolutism of the founders that was ignorant, they just were, you know, just didn't know any better. But now we have this new thing. But it is an absolutism. He's saying that absolutely mm-hmm. historicism rules now and forever.
Right.
So he's really arguing and saying that there is this absolute vision of that the founders had, and we're replacing it with our absolute
right.
vision of the way things are.
Mm-hmm.
But what's missing in all of this, and what Wilson and the other progressives, and even today, they don't address, we have to get to the idea, well, which one happens to be true?
Right.
There has to be an attempt to say, okay, you've got two competing visions of the way people are and the way government ought to be, and you can't just say, well, this is the one it is because it's history. No, you've got to say that's an absolute vision of man and government, and you have to make an argument about why that is true as opposed to the argument the founders made for the vision that they had.
Mm-hmm.
There has to be an attempt to get at the truth of it, otherwise we're lost.
Right.
And I think the progressives are arguing for, no, don't look there, just believe us when we say
right.
we're in the midst of history, go with it.
Well, not only are they saying that, but they're teaching that in the schools. That's why there's so little history being taught in our nation's
revisionist
schools today.
History. Right.
Or revisionist when it is taught, that happens a lot as well. But certainly not an honest look at what progressive ideas have led to over the course of human history and you know, what socialism leads to, what communism leads to. There's this idea, I think, and it may be part of the fact that they are progressive in the sense that they think that we're getting better. I think maybe if I were a progressive, my response to that might be, well, the reason why we don't want to look back at history is because we believe we're always getting better. And so we can do it better next time. You know, if we just get the right government program or the right mix of people that we're going to do it correctly this time around. And so maybe they don't want to look back at history because they think they can do it better.
Do it better, right.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's always been the utopian vision.
Right.
And it's just unfortunate that
right.
there's never been any confirming evidence right. in human history
yes,
to show that's ever happened. And that, you know, human beings, we are, you know, in a Christian sense,
right.
we are sinful, we are fallen, we are flawed. And you can't legislate that sin away.
Nope, you can't
change our nature and to say, well, well, we're not going to be these flawed human beings. We're going to be somehow angelic. You know, Madison says, you know, if men were angels, no government would be necessary.
And
we're not. We're human beings.
And
we have to recognize. That was the genius of the founders, is recognizing the nature of man.
Yeah.
And I think what's interesting in recognizing that, in wanting to put forth legislation that is virtuous, the accusation then that came back against conservatives is you can't legislate morality.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so it ends up working that whole platform behind progressivism is doing just that.
Well, I was just going to say, they are actually trying to legislate morality right now.
So. Well, truth be known, what is law?
Every law is a right.
It's a moral statement.
Yes,
every law is saying something is right and something is wrong. When people say you can't legislate morality, I say, well, what is it you propose to legislate?
Right.
What is law?
But
a statement of a society that here are the right things and here are the wrong things. It's all moral. It's a question of what is that morality based on? Is it based on a vision of human nature that the founders argue for? Or is it based on this sort of historical contingency that progressives argue for?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, we are getting ready to take a break here. But before progressives were really ready to actually take on the full volume of the task to operate a socialist government, they knew they had to reform the government institutions by changing the structure of the Constitution. So when we return to Education Nation, we're going to take a look at the progressive assault on the Constitution. Stay tuned. We don't need no control. Welcome back to Education Nation. I'm your host, Rebecca Hagstrom, with co-host Mark Durkin. And joined in studio to discuss the rise of American progressivism is former Minnesota State Senator David Hand. And as progressives sought to change the landscape of American government, sustained assaults on the founders' vision for government turned to assaults on the powers of the government directly. And the founders had a very different idea of the power and how to use government. They were obviously much more interested in enumerated powers, whereas progressives have a different view. Do you want to help us and help our listeners understand that difference?
Sure. And I think it really goes back to, again, the understanding the founders had of the nature of man and that we are prone to do bad things.
Yeah.
You know, we're capable of great virtue, but we're also capable of great vice. And so they recognized that. And they said, look, if you're going to give a government a lot of power, which is what they were proposing, you have to make sure that the people who operate those levers of power are not going to use that to enrich themselves or to help themselves or their friends and to do it at the cost of the rest of the people. You want to have good government, you have to find ways to do that. So they listed specific things, the so-called enumerated powers that the federal government had, and they said very specifically, these are the powers and the only powers that the federal government has. Anything not mentioned in this list are powers reserved for the people or the states. And so that what they really were doing was, in addition to limiting the power of the federal government, they were also setting up a separation of power so that as human beings, as we do what we do and as we act poorly and badly and selfishly and all those things, that you've got state legislatures and governors and a Congress and a judiciary. And you've got all these different sort of conflicting elements warring against each other. And the people who serve in those offices are very, of course, because we're human, we're jealous of those positions. And so there is a natural check on the use of that power. It's a thing that Wilson criticized, says, well, you can't have a body at war with itself. You know, that's not natural. That's not human. The progressives are looking for a unification. Mm-hmm. They want all power to be unified in one place, in the federal
central
government. and so that there isn't this gridlock and this conflict. They want to do away with all that.
Right, and government exists, in their view, to do and can do whatever it thinks is necessary as long as there are no specific restrictions or prohibitions. So if you're going to bring litigation to the courts, you better find something very specifically in the Constitution that says, no, they can't do this, otherwise you really run the risk of losing. You know, we talk about this taking apart of the enumerated powers. Theodore Roosevelt and other progressives, they would attack the judiciary, and they had assaults on other political institutions as well. They were promoting for this idea of a direct democracy, which was opposed to the enumerated powers, rather. If you could explain for us briefly what this notion of direct democracy is.
Well, it goes back to what you had mentioned, that there's this belief by Wilson and others that democracy and socialism are essentially the same. And I think that is part of the fundamental belief, that somehow having people participate in decision making directly, that you're going to just you're going to get some sort of magical wisdom that comes of that. And the founders all knew that this was folly. That,
right.
that these democracies have been tried many, many times in the past. They don't work. They're very prone. They said, you know, the same group that at one moment decides to honor Socrates, the next minute is condemning him to death. So they are passions driving democracies that do not allow for wisdom to emerge. And the founders are very concerned that we are governed by laws and not by men. And they wanted to create a situation where we'd have that opportunity to figure that out.
Hmm. Right. And through some of this change that was taking place through the progressives, we get the new ballot initiatives, the referendums, the recalls. These are some of the legacies of the progressive movement.
And don't forget the 17th Amendment, which is the direct election of the U.S. senators, which did great harm to this idea of separation of powers.
Yes.
Maybe the single
right.
biggest blow to the idea that states were to serve as a check on federal power.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they used to be elected by the state legislators.
Yes.
Correct?
Yes.
That's what I thought. Yeah, that's a big change.
Mm-hmm.
Senator Hahn, what would prompt James Madison to believe, he in the Federalist Papers said specifically that going around political institutions is the exact type of government that would actually fail.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what progressivism is doing. So what would prompt Madison to believe that direct democracy would fail and
and I think a lot of the founders refer to democracy and other places as mob rule, and what that really does, what the direct democracy element ties into, is the passions of people. We are human beings. We're not robots. We have reason, the power to reason, but we also have great passions. And pure democracies play into those passions. You get people who make speeches and get people riled up, and people want to do something, want to do it right away, and so they all get together and they vote for this or that, but they're not very consistent. They may vote for one thing or want one thing one moment, and the next thing you know they want something completely different.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a great distrust of being able to get good rule, wise rule from a democracy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a very interesting topic, and we are actually going to have to wind up here today. And I think we're having some trouble with our mics here, so if you're having trouble hearing us, I think we're cutting in and out. But we are going to have Senator Hahn in next week again to talk about some of the current effects now of progressivism in our culture today. And this has been so interesting, and I think really what it does is it opens up kind of a whole can of worms for our listeners. I would challenge everyone to go and do some of their own research on this, because I think a lot of these notions, just like so many elements of past history, we tend to embrace them almost by osmosis. You know, being born later in the culture, we just accept some of these things as true when really they're not consistent at all with our constitutional rule. So we're going to be back again next week with Senator Hahn to talk more about progressivism. And we thank you for joining us today on Education Nation.
You behind the